Episode 2 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hi, I'm Louisa Jewell, author of the just-released book, Wire Your Brain for Confidence, The Science of Conquering Self-Doubt. If you want to confidently thrive at work and in your life, then download and listen to the Next Year podcast with my friend, Tom Hefner.
You find that the people with grit who create purposeful habits that take them where they want to go, they develop something in their heads that they switch to, almost like an implementation intention. Like, if it gets hard, then I will do this.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business and entrepreneurship. Today, you and I have a wonderful opportunity to learn from best-selling author and grit expert Caroline Miller. Her book, Getting Grit, is the best practical guide I know of for how we can get more grit in our life. In our conversation, I'll be asking Caroline about her motivation behind studying and writing about grit and goal setting, including how she overcame a devastating eating disorder to live a meaningful and purposeful life. The number one thing that is preventing you from reaching your goals, habits and practices that will help you develop grit right now, and much, much more. Caroline Miller is a pioneer in the field of positive psychology, with her work focusing on how to apply research in goal setting and accomplishment, grit and happiness to the real world, to our lives. I think this application component, I think that's really important because without application to people, to organizations, to communities, then research, it's just theory. Caroline does this through a variety of ways. She's a best-selling author of several books, including her latest one, Getting Grit, The Evidence-Based Approach to Cultivating Passion, Perseverance, and Purpose. Caroline is also an accomplished speaker and professional coach, coaching individuals from senior executives, professional athletes, parents, and even politicians. So you probably have a thriving business with those folks right now. And best of all, she practices what she preaches by sharing all this goodness through her teaching, most recently as a popular presenter at the UPenn Wharton Business School Executive MBA program. Caroline, it is truly a pleasure and an honor to have you here today. Thank you and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on this podcast.
Thank you very much, Caroline. We'll have a chance to hear from Caroline in a moment on the purposeful habits and practices she studied and developed to help us become gritty. But first, I want to dive deep into her unique professional and personal background. Caroline graduated from Harvard with a degree in American history and was a competitive swimmer in high school and college. Caroline, what led you to pursue such a unique career in this field of practice?
Well, I think you hit on all the reasons why just a second ago. I come from a family that had Olympic gold medalists and grew up in Washington, which, as you referenced, is quite an interesting place to be these days. So it's a competitive town. It's a political town. My family is, you know, high standards academically and athletically. And I went to the dark side of the pursuit of all of the wrong goals. And some of that was my environment. Some of it was just the stories I was told. Some of it was me. It doesn't even matter at this point. But what does matter is that I bottomed out with an eating disorder, bulimia, when I was 22, newly married, 7 years into it. So back then, 1984, nobody was getting better. In fact, it was a really hopeless condition. And I did get better for all kinds of reasons. And I was the first one to live through that disorder and write a book about it. So I wrote the first book by anybody who overcame bulimia and lived to tell about it. And that set me on fire with the burning question, how do you set and accomplish life-changing goals like saving your own life? And because of that, that led me into coaching, which led me to Penn, the first class at University of Pennsylvania Masters of Applied Positive Psychology program. That was where I was introduced to goal setting theory and a lot of other theories. And I wove those together into the first evidence-based book on goal setting, which is hard for me to believe, but that's a fact, believe it or not. So 2009, first goal setting book with footnotes and evidence was mine. And that led me very naturally here to grit. So it's all started with my recovery from my eating disorder. And I have been a woman on a mission since 1984 to not just save my life, but to make everyone else's life hopeful and empowered with the right tools to make a difference in the world.
I imagine that must have been a pretty rewarding experience along the way, and that, you know, being one of the first people to talk about that in your memoir. Have you had people reach out to you over the years and kind of, you know, tell you about their experience? And
oh, my God. Hundreds of thousands of people. At one point, Dear Abby wrote about me, and the entire Baltimore post office, everyone who worked there came out with a box of letters that were piled so high that they thought they were meeting the woman who had won the lottery. And I do know from the feedback, the letters, the handwritten letters, the emails, the phone calls, that hundreds of thousands of people were touched by that book. And many say it saved their life because I gave them hope. And, you know, we know from hope theory that when you give somebody hope, you change their brains. And because of that, and because one person said a sentence that changed my life in 1984, when she just said, "My name is Betsy and I'm recovering from bulimia one day at a time," that sentence changed my life because she said words I'd never heard before. And she changed the way I looked at myself. She changed the way I looked at the world. The world went from black and white to technicolor. Because suddenly in that moment, in that rare moment of hearing that someone else had gotten better from this disorder that was only killing people, I knew that somehow I could also find a way to get better. And the response has been gratifying for 30 years. I even was giving birth to my third child, and a nurse leaned over and said, "Thank you for writing that book." That was in 1995.
Oh my goodness.
And I have to tell you, that happens to me constantly still, 30 years later. People tell me they remember where they were when they saw that book. So it's been very gratifying. And I know in some small way, I made the world a little bit better because I gave people hope.
Yeah. I mean, that, and I don't think it's a small way. I think it's a large way.
I hope so.
Caroline's latest book is titled Getting Grit. You know, grit is everywhere I turn nowadays. It's in popular articles, on TV, TED Talks, and books. Caroline, speak if you would about what grit actually is.
Grit is several different things. And to me, it's something maybe a little bit more unique than what people have heard of. So I think everybody's familiar with Angela Duckworth's work. If you've heard of grit, you've heard of Angela Duckworth, her MacArthur Genius Grant Award, and her work with the grit scale and all. So I wrote about Angela's work in Creating Your Best Life, my fifth book, the goal setting book. But not much was known then. I think I was the first to actually put her work into the mass market. But I was fascinated by it because I was writing this goal setting book, and I was running across research showing that every day we mark our days with an analysis of whether or not we did hard things that day. And we don't always know we do this. We do it unconsciously in some ways. And
how so?
Okay. So what that means is that the University of San Francisco did research that I call the no pain, no gain research. And what they found is that at the end of the day, we all on some level ask ourselves, what did we do today? And am I proud of how my day was spent, how I used my time? And what a lot of it comes down to is, did I do hard things today? Because it's only by going out of your comfort zone in pursuit of meaningful goals that people actually augment self-esteem and build what we call authentic self-esteem. And so this is coming hard on the heels of this law of attraction movement, which was really garbage. It's very much a 20th century approach to, if you want it, you can have it. It's very magical. It's like unicorns and rainbows. It doesn't work. And it leaves people feeling dispirited and disempowered because if maybe they did want it a lot, but it leaves out the hard work part. So my book came on the heels of that early in the 21st century. And I really like this research because it speaks to me, partly because my life really began in many ways with when I overcame my eating disorder, because that's when I had to ask myself, what do I want? And how am I going to get there? And so starting with overcoming an eating disorder, which is very, very hard because there's lots of failure involved in overcoming addictions, that's when I found out what I was made of. That's when I cultivated grit. So I come from, you know, this nice private school Harvard background with, you know, I did well in extracurriculars and swimming and writing and all the rest of it. But I think what I had was talent and success and not grit, and certainly not the hardest goals I could have set, because I tried not to venture out of my comfort zone because I didn't want anyone to think I was anything other than very talented and smart. So don't risk failure. If you're that person, this is the fixed mindset. And so the interesting thing to me is that really life begins outside of your comfort zone, and the research backs that up. So we have to do hard things every day. And if we want to, we can throw in self-determination theory and our drive for mastery and autonomy. And so we need this. And so people who aren't doing that are languishing. And what we want to do is flourish. And so it really starts with setting the right goals, the, you know, purposeful, meaningful goals, developing the right habits that will allow us to pursue and achieve those goals, many of them hopefully hard, because what we find is that people who set and achieve hard goals then go and set harder goals. So back to grit. So you have to talk about grit when you talk about hard goals, because it requires this secret sauce. So Angela put it on the map, and I scrutinized it and I studied it, and I work with hundreds, if not thousands, of people as an executive coach. And the part that wasn't working for me was that it didn't feel like it covered all of the different conditions that come up when you work with real people. And so I quickly discovered that kind of grit that elicited best performance and best results was the kind of grit that you used in going out of your comfort zone, pursuing meaningful goals, but in the process of doing that, you awe and inspire other people to be greater too. And so to me, that's authentic grit. That's when it's also part of systems theory. The whole system is uplifted because you witness somebody doing something that makes you ask yourself, why not me? You know, what if? What if I dreamed a little bit bigger? What if I tried, you know, harder for 10 more minutes? And so I decided that the kind of good grit that I wanted to really focus on, that I saw getting best results, was under this umbrella of authentic grit. And so to do that and to make it relatable and understandable, I had to also talk about what's bad grit. When I work with people in companies or go speak around the world, I often found there was this stupid grit. And this is where I diverge from Angela a little bit. And she's been incredibly kind and very generous with her praise in what I've done here. So I talk about stupid grit. And in the book, my publisher preferred the word stubborn, but stupid really took hold. People love stupid grit because it is stupid. What we do is we cling to the wrong goals for too long, just like mountaineers going up to a summit. We fixate on the summit. And it's like, you know, at whatever cost, we're going to get up there. We're going to take all the people who are roped in with us and the Sherpas, and we're going to go up there, even if there's a whiteout or a blizzard coming. So we die on the descent, if not the ascent. So stupid grit is like summit fever. And those are entrepreneurs who, you know, don't take advice and they've missed the market. They stayed in too long. It's marked by a distinct lack of humility. You don't take in information from the environment or other people. You don't listen or heed. So stupid grit is bad grit. There's also faux grit, which is such an epidemic in our society, because it's people who want you to think they did something hard, but they fake the results. And they lie about how they got there. So just think performance-enhancing drugs. Think about people faking their PhD research. You know, think about people who buy the Medal of Honor, our nation's highest military award, and they wear it and put it on their resume.
Wait, that's people buy the Medal of Honor?
OMG. They buy it at flea markets. You can buy it online. I couldn't believe it.
That's unbelievable. I mean, that's crazy because my dad was in the Marine Corps for 27 years. So that's maybe I have a skewed vision of military life, but that's just something that feels definitely wrong to do.
It is wrong. And many people think it's one of the worst things you can do is misappropriate someone else's honor. And it's our nation's highest military honor. And to take that and to lie about your military service, many people think it's the most egregious thing you can do. And there's a commission that's been set up in our government to seek people out. And there's hundreds of people who do it every year.
Wow.
So it's faux grit. It's disgusting.
Why is it that why do you think it is people engage in faux grit?
Because I think we all long to be elite in one way or another. I think we long to know what it is to be a special forces kind of person, somebody who does hard things and, you know, is a finisher. Even in just ordinary kinds of goals that are extraordinary for us, I think people long to do that. And in writing Getting Grit, I was looking at the prevalence of movies that involve military heroism and special forces. Those have gone up. And I think they've gone up partly because we're in a culture have been for the last generation of comfort, where it's been everybody gets a trophy, you know, trigger warnings, you know, comfort animals.
Everybody wants to feel special.
Everybody wants to feel special, but nobody wants to do the work. And our society's made it very difficult for people to have to pursue hard goals because they've made everybody a winner in many ways. So I think people have been longing to know, well, what does it take to actually be a winner? So I think that's a piece of why people do kind of steal Medal of Honors or to performance enhancing drugs, because they want the glory that comes with being someone like that, but they don't want to do the work. And then finally, there are people who do that kind of work, but they don't awe and inspire other people. They repel them because they talk about themselves. And that's what I call selfie grit. And we have too much of that too, because we have people who are posting their CrossFit workouts on Facebook, you know, the humble brag, like, yeah. Just another day at CrossFit, you know, did 100 pull-ups, LOL. I mean, but there's just so much of this bragging going on. And one of the reasons I included a chapter on humility and getting grit is the right kind of grit always has humility in it, always has social and intellectual humility baked into it. Because those are the people who are curious about, where am I falling short? And they're not
seek out data from the environment that will help them know how to get there. So I think that's a piece of it. But there is good grit, too. There's Mount Rushmore grit. Those are the people who have changed history. They've changed the world because they stood at the intersection of change and they had a passion and a value that they held on to regardless of what came at them. Think of Martin Luther King, Malala Yousafzai, who I was a poster child for this.
To what degree does failure play a role in developing grit? I mean, is that something that you have to go through? I mean, that in order to develop good grit, do you have to have, you know, failure, big or small?
Well, yeah, you have to have failure, and that's all part of seeking out data from the environment that humble people have, is they're not afraid to go out and fail. So when you're failing, you're actually pushing the boundaries of what's possible for you or what's possible for other people. And those are the people who are like Carol Dweck's work, you know, not yet. I didn't learn it yet. It's been found to create more persistence. But you have to be unafraid to get up and keep going. And I always hearken back to my eating disorder. I had slips with my eating disorder. I mean, the hardest thing to learn to do is to not have an eating disorder because you can't live without food. And so, of course, there's slips, right? And so you have to fail, but you have to learn from that failure. And in the book, I talk about double loop learning. And what that means is the people who really are the highest achievers among us are the ones who ruthlessly scrutinize failure for what it is they can take from it and apply so that they can go out and be better next time. And it's also deliberate practice. You know, there's so many terms we can throw around here, which is, you know, you've got a goal, but you're not just, you know, randomly hitting a bucket of balls. You're hitting a bucket of balls to try to get 5 feet from the pin. So yes, you have to fail. And in order to do that, you have to have metrics by which you judge, are you making progress or not making progress? And a lot of people skip that step in goal setting because they don't want to be disappointed in their efforts. So they're deliberately vague. So yeah, you've got to fail and you've got to be the kind of person who's willing to have like I call a wooden shoes mindset. You got to be willing to have what Voltaire talked about as history is made by silk, the sound of silken slippers going down the stairs and wooden shoes coming up the stairs. You got to have wooden shoes coming up the stairs, clomp, clomp, clomp. Here I come, learning all the way. If you don't have that kind of mindset, and too many young adults have not been bred to have that mindset, you will never have grit. And grit is where all of the good stuff happens.
So you talked about deliberate mindset there just a moment ago, and you know, hit those bucket of balls. When I was growing up, I had so many people tell me about, you know, follow my passion. You can never, you know, go wrong if you follow your passion. To be able to have deliberate practice, you have to have some amount of passion, I would think. What role then, if any, does passion play in developing grit?
Oh, it's a huge role. I have a chapter on passion because Bob Vallerand, who's done, I think, all of the work that most people cite, is a Canadian researcher who researches passion. And he's divided passion into harmonious passion and obsessive passion. And so harmonious passion is like having a really great boyfriend or girlfriend, and they bring out the best in you. They make you a better man or a better woman. They fill you up with love and attention, and makes you want to just do nice things. Obsessive passion is like the jealous lover who won't leave you alone, who doesn't bring out the best in you. So the kind of passion you're looking for is a harmonious passion where you don't live and die based on whether or not you achieve your goals, but it fills you up with curiosity and creativity and makes you go further than you would otherwise. It's Zygarnik passion is what I call it, because it brings you back to the table over and over again in a positive way, so that you're seeking out more learning, more information, more data to see where you are and how far you can explore. But you don't have such a wedded persona to this passion that you think you're nothing without it. And that's a dangerous line to cross.
I want to switch topics to the more practical part of our podcast, specifically the topic of everyday purposeful habits and practices. Caroline is a professional coach, and she's worked with thousands of clients over the years. We talked about that a little earlier. If you want to get better at work, if you want to excel in sports, improve your relationships, whatever that thing is, this is really, really important for you. Caroline, what are the most effective habits and practices we can cultivate to become gritty?
Interesting. So there are a couple things that come to mind for me that are in the book. They're also in Creating Your Best Life, but also I live them because I went back to swimming when I was 40 and started to compete again because my eating disorder stole it from me like many other things. And I went back to it with a different kind of passion. And so to get up at 4:20 and go swimming, one of the things I do is I anchor myself to the right kind of people. And so I don't just swim alone, I swim with a team. So the fastest way to create habit change is to change your environment. And that includes selecting the right people, people who also have the same goals and who have the same attitude that you want to have. So that's number one, be around the right kind of people, because that kind of positive air of wanting to be better, doing your best, going out of your comfort zone, being passionate about something, that's contagious. So you want to do that. Number two is you've got to have this mindset. And I found in doing all these interviews about my book is I would ask people, you know, how did they keep going when things got tough, emotionally tough, physically tough, financially tough, whatever tough you want to talk about. And they all had a channel they switched in their brains that was the channel that allowed them to keep going. And whatever that channel was, it was something like a vision they had. It was a little slogan. It was a biblical phrase. It was a song. It was a picture. I interviewed the woman who caught Aldrich Ames. She was one of two women who didn't quit on figuring out who was the mole in the CIA in the 80s and 90s. And I asked her what she thought about when everybody quit. It took her 9.5 years, and she finally linked Aldrich Ames' deposits in his bank account to the day after he met with his Russian handler. And she said she would alternately see two things in her head. One was her dead assets, and those were the Russian generals and spies whose safety she was responsible for. So they were slaughtered by the KGB, just slaughtered because Aldrich James sold them out for money. So she'd see them in her head, or she'd see his little face. She knew it was him. She thought it was him. She was like 99% she was sure it was him, but she couldn't prove it yet. So she kept going. And then alternately, she said, I would see his smug little smile in my face. But you find that the people with grit who create purposeful habits that take them where they want to go, they develop something in their heads that they switch to, almost like an implementation intention. Like, if it gets hard, then I will do this. Then I will talk to myself. Then I will sing a song. Then I will distract myself. So I think that's another part of it. And so it's the people, it's the mindset, and I think it's also just having the goals that are aligned with your values. You've got to be pulled forward with this passion, this Zygarnik passion. And you can't do that by adopting somebody else's goals. You have to really ruthlessly ask yourself the so what question. If I pursue this goal, so what? What changes? Why does it make my life better? Why does it make the world better? So if you can't answer the so what question in a way that is actually ennobling and makes the world better, then you might be pursuing someone else's goals. We call those extrinsic goals. So if you get those things right, then I think you're on your way to developing the habits and the life that you want to have. And if I can, I want to throw in one more thing.
Yeah.
And that is, I interviewed Roy Baumeister about self-regulation and discipline about 10 years ago. And he was the first person to tell me that the number one thing that undermines all goal pursuit is this one substance. And I'm curious, what do you think it is?
Willpower?
Well, what undermines willpower? If you study most people, what is the one condition that they find almost always, if not always, deters goal pursuit and makes it almost impossible?
I'm not sure.
Alcohol.
Oh.
And so I'm just fascinated by that because I've been interviewed hundreds, if not thousands of times about why did I get better in 1984 when so many of my cohort died from eating disorders or really never got better? Because the largest group entering eating disorder centers right now is women my age. And so whenever people ask me that, one of my first answers is always, I stopped drinking. And addiction is often related to family, you know, genetics, mm-hmm. and there was alcoholism in my family, but I did stop drinking. And when I interviewed Roy Baumeister and I connected it with goal setting and purpose and the ability to do hard things, what I realized is I took away this number one condition that deters all goal pursuit, because when you drink alcohol, the world becomes a slippery slope and it's very difficult to hold on to your goals and your willpower when your judgment is compromised. And I can't tell you how many people I've coached who want to do hard things and create purposeful habits, who either give up alcohol or really limit it to just very a few social situations, because it doesn't help. It usually hurts people.
That's really fascinating that you said that, because connecting back to my own life experiences, and not that I was ever an alcoholic or drank a lot, but probably about 9 years ago before I developed acid reflux, I would have a beer, you know, maybe a couple beers a week or something like that. And because of my condition with acid reflux, I ended up having to dramatically change the way that I eat, including no more alcohol. And, you know, for years, I'd been overweight. I wouldn't say I was huge necessarily, but I was definitely overweight. And then over the course of the next year or two, after being forced to change and forced to give up alcohol, I ended up losing probably like 40 pounds and kept it off now for 9 years, right? I'll say anecdotally, at least in my case, that makes I'm connecting the dots now, and that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And something came out this week from the Centers for Disease Control that was really alarming. And that is that 1 in 8 Americans is an alcoholic. And I find that fascinating because we live in this society of abundance in many ways. We're a first world country. And you and I both study positive psychology and the conditions for flourishing. And money doesn't make people happy. And things don't make people happy. But we have a nation of people who are so unhappy that alcohol is often what they turn to alleviate whatever emotional pain they're struggling with. And so one interesting note that I'm studying now, because my next book is about women and grit, is we're losing middle-aged women in a staggering pace right now. They're dying earlier from previous generations from what we call diseases of despair. Why are we in such despair? Why are we struggling? And I think some of it is because we haven't had the discipline to create the right habits that will lead us to a happier, more productive, fulfilling life. And so I see your podcast as being part of what can hopefully alleviate the suffering, because when people feel masterful in their lives, they really begin to feel more, you know, confident. And when you're more confident, you stand up straighter, you're more curious, you take in more data, you pursue harder things. We need a contagion of this kind of behavior, because we're heading in the wrong direction. And it makes me really sad. And women in particular are struggling the most. We need to do something about it.
I would say, even as a parent, you know, to two young kids and another one on the way, I completely agree with you. And it's one of my fears, and, you know, in my small way, one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I do have that same fear. So to that end, you know, as a parent, I'm really obviously interested in having my kids become gritty. And I think probably all parents would want that. Are there different habits and practices that as a parent, I can focus on to help my children get more gritty?
Well, I think I made a lot of mistakes, to be honest with you. Because I was raising my kids right in the middle of this whole self-esteem movement where we were told, make them happy at all costs. You know, it's like, what did I know? I was a first-time parent. But we now see the mistakes. And so And it really just led to a generation of narcissists and sociopaths. So the evidence is in that just happy kids at all costs is not the right way to go. Just like in medicine, one of the goals of doctors was to take away all pain, because that was one of the signs that you had a thriving patient is no pain, but that led to the opioid crisis. So I would say let your children fail. Let them be unhappy at times. You know, we know from Roy Baumeister's research that you don't want your kids to have everything at once. You want them to develop delayed gratification. Gosh, if I could go back and do that better, that would probably be where I'd start. But more than anything, when I was getting my Grit book published, I had, and this was my seventh book, and I have a really good track record in the publishing world with major publishers, I got rejected everywhere. I mean, there was nowhere that would take me. And what I did was I shared it with my children. I didn't try to hide it from them. I didn't try to hide my disappointment. I just said, you know what? I got rejected again. I was even sending him to Angela Duckworth. I was saying, my God, if I didn't like you so much, I'd really be upset about this. Because they were all saying, well, no one will buy your book because once Angela's comes out, who would ever want another book on Grit, which is so dumb. But anyway, so it all worked out well because I did get a publisher eventually. But my children now reflect back to me that instead, it wasn't the things that we said to them and it wasn't the lectures they heard that allowed them to develop their own grit. It was watching what we did on a day-by-day basis to pursue our own goals, to do hard things, to fail and get up again. Because we can't be this, you know, generation of parents who say, don't do what I do what I say, because it doesn't pay off. And my kids are now old enough at 28, 25, and 22 to be able to answer these questions when I ask them that. Because what they'll say is they saw us not quit. They saw us fail. They saw us lose jobs. They saw us go through all kinds of things. And what they saw was we got up and kept swinging. And we want our kids to get up and still swing. Because in the 21st century, one of the key skills that companies are hiring for is grit. They want employees who don't quit. And it's become a huge challenge in the hiring world and companies is, you know, people who don't stay late. They won't stay late. They don't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, that's even more important nowadays because we do have this generation that maybe not be as gritty as the previous generation, right? So the fact that if you can develop that grit, you will stand out that much more, right?
Oh, yeah. And they believe me, they've got questions they have figured out to ask. And I was even told in one of my interviews that they look for Eagle Scouts. They look for kids who grew up doing sports where there were no cheerleaders. They want to know, you know, who grew up on a family farm because the livestock don't really care if you're tired. You know, they want to be fed. So these companies are getting very crafty about figuring out who to hire. And the saying is be slow to hire and fast to fire, because the disruptive employee who's contagiously negative is a real problem. But boy, if you wait and you hire people who've demonstrated passion and perseverance and who know how to work on teams and who have grit and can communicate, you've got a gold star. I mean, you can teach them anything. You can't teach them how to be gritty if they've never done it before. I mean, you can. I get hired to help people do that. But look for that first. Look for those kids who maybe didn't have their college education handed to them. I had one person who told me that she asked people, who paid for your college? And they also want to know, did you have chores or did your parents just give you spending money? I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, because a lot is riding on getting it right.
That's really interesting, too. And this is going to sound like I'm patting myself on the back, which is definitely not the case. But with our kids, one of the things that we always talk about is you're a citizen of this house. And yeah, as such, you have a responsibility to keep it clean, just as mom and dad do. And so we make them do chores every day. And it's not always easy. You know, sometimes they're tired or they're frustrated or whatever. But that's one thing that we've always tried to do. And to the point where, hey, if you don't have time to do your homework, I'm sorry, but guess what? You're going to be doing this because everybody's a citizen in this house.
Yeah, you know what? The research is lines up right behind you. And this is somewhere where I think I just bombed. I didn't do a very good job of that. And I wish I'd done a better job, because the research shows that kids who grow up with that phrase, citizens of the house, things aren't just here to serve you. You're here to also be part of a collective. And then you've got a job. They grow up with more confidence because they feel needed. They feel like their work is wanted and that people depend on them. Those are good things. But too many parents just check out and say, oh, it's too hard. It's too hard. It's too hard. Oh, so they're drinking and driving. I mean, I hate to say it, but my kids, when they pass through that, there were parents who would say, oh, when I was their age, I drank and drove too. They'll be fine. But they just don't want to do the hard work of taking the keys away and dealing with anger. So if you start young with right kinds of chores and discipline and responsibilities, you stand a much better chance of getting all those good results that we hope for later in life.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, that's your biggest fear, right? You want them to turn out well, and you do the best you can. But at least good to know that I've got, you know, at least one thing I'm doing right.
Well, with your military background, my guess is you're better set up to be a parent in some ways than a lot of other people.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. The ones who do it well are the ones who have some family member somewhere touching in on the Marine discipline or the Army or the hierarchy or the just chores. One of the speeches that I have everybody watch if possible, and I always use snippets in my talks, is Admiral McCraven's 10 Ways to Change the World. If you haven't seen that, you ought to, because it'll resonate with you. But he gave the University of Texas at Austin commencement speech in 2014, and it's an 18-minute talk called 10 Ways to Change the World. He was the head of the Navy SEALs. He was a Navy SEAL, and he talks about, you know what, if you want to change the world, start with these 10 things. And he says, these are the 10 things we do in Navy SEAL training, and it is galvanizing. I can't look away. Nobody can look away. Once you start to watch it, you can't look away, because there's so much wisdom in every 90-second story.
No, I'm definitely going to check that out. It's funny kind of side note. So my background is also in engineering, and one of the projects that I worked on was actually in direct support of Admiral McCraven, where we were helping develop the next Iron Man suit, basically. So I'm definitely familiar. Yeah, so it was really cool. I'm definitely familiar with him, but I didn't realize he had that commencement speech. So I'm definitely going to write that down and check it out.
Put it in the show notes. It is that good.
Okay, I'll definitely add it to the show notes. Before I move on to some questions not directly related to the book, what else from your book would you like us to know, or what else am I missing?
Well, the first part of the book, I really wanted to be sure that people understand that this isn't me coming out as a cranky parent saying, I just don't like these, you know, no grades or safe spaces. I really took some time to help people understand, how did we get here? How did we get to the point where the Department of Motor Vehicles has deemed parallel parking too hard, you know, so kids don't have to learn parallel parking anymore. Because we've really gotten to be a culture of everyone's a winner, and it's been at all costs. So I want people to understand that it's taken a generation for us to get to the point where we're really seeing disastrous results in life, in schools and in communities and in companies. So, but then what I do is I talk about, it's really important to understand that you bake a grit cake with a variety of different character strengths. And it does start with well-being. You have to flourish emotionally. And so there's some understanding you have to bring to grit around, you know, basic flourishing. And then there's a science to goal setting. It's not smart goals. There's a science to it. And then I go into the other chapters about humility and patience. I mean, we have a generation of people who navigate away from websites if they don't load in 3 seconds. I mean, that's where we are. And we have to develop patience. So I have that broken out, and you can start wherever you are, because some people have more self-control, more patience, more humility. Start somewhere, but start baking the grit cake and then give it away to somebody else, because you can't keep what you don't give away. And I'm a big believer that we owe it to others to give away whatever we've learned that's valuable. So that's the last thing I think I'd like to say about that.
In addition to her pioneering work in positive psychology, Caroline is also a very successful entrepreneur. She has a thriving business coaching executives. She teaches at Wharton and NYU, and she offers a variety of webinars. If you're thinking about starting your own business, or maybe you already have one, then pay attention, because this will be really crucial for you. Caroline, what are some of the key lessons or insights you've learned along the way as an entrepreneur?
Get a coach and pay for the best coach you can afford, because I remember when I was becoming a coach, I hired the president of the International Coach Federation. I could barely afford her. But I knew instinctively that if you're mentored by somebody who's where you want to be, and you're willing to be apprenticed and have the humility to learn at someone else's knee, you know, do that. Get a coach, get a mentor. So I think that's really important. Have goals, and have measurable goals. Don't just say, I'm going to do my best. And we know from goal setting theory that you have to have performance goals that are challenging and specific with metrics. So I think that's a big part of it. Another thing that's really important for me is to, and I said it earlier, the fastest way to change a habit is to change your environment and the people around you. I think you have to be around people people who are go-getters and people who are what Adam Grant talks about in Give and Take, who give, who don't just take. And I think women really need to watch out for this, because women tend to be surrounded by frenemies because we don't want to be seen as not nice. And don't do that. So be prepared to surround yourself with people who bring out the best in you, who are positive energizers. And I've really made a point of doing that and being in mastermind groups with people who bring out the best in me. And
real quick, what's a mastermind group?
Oh, okay. So a mastermind group is either something that meets in person or it meets virtually on screens, or it could meet on the phone, but it's a self-selected or hand-selected group of people, usually no more than seven, who meet on a monthly basis to share their goals and their challenges and their failures, and to ask for advice and brainstorming and support. And really the most successful people either have these informally or formally. So you don't want to be alone in your pursuit of your goals. You want to be in some kind of collectives that are deliberate, that bring out the best in you. So I coach a lot in things like YPO and EO, and they have forums. And these forums are very similar to what we talk about here, mastermind groups. But in particular, you know, women really need this because for all kinds of reasons that we don't have time to go into. But I think everybody should be in a mastermind group. But there's other new research that's really kind of scary. And that is, we are now on track to have more people living alone in our country than ever before. And so loneliness and being alone is more toxic to the body than cancer. And it can be toxic to building a business and running a business if you feel alone or you are alone. So we must connect with other people on a regular basis in a variety of positive ways.
That's a really good piece of advice. And I'll say, for me, I hadn't thought about that, or I hadn't come across that yet. So you know, as you know, I'm building this podcast. That's something that I'm going to do today. As soon as we get off the phone here, I'm going to go and find a mastermind group or a group of like-minded podcasters that are developing their podcasts. So that's a really great piece of advice.
Good. It'll help. It always helps.
All right, let's wrap up with one of my favorite parts of the show, where we ask you about the best books you've read. So think about the books you've enjoyed over the years. What would you say are the 2-3 books that immediately jump to mind as having had the biggest impression on you?
Oh, boy. I always fail at this question, because when you write books, you often do other kinds of things with your free time. So I came up with two. One, people are going to laugh about, The Clue of the Crossword Cipher. It's a Nancy Drew mystery.
Okay.
Well, I remember when I was like 8 or 9 years old, I read that book and it did so many things for me. And when I took the VIA strengths test and I realized I was really high in a lot of the strengths that Nancy Drew had, like curiosity and bravery and, you know, wisdom, I thought, you know, it really brought out the best in me. So read books that match some of your values, that reinforce some of the character strengths that you have. And then another book that I didn't just read, I read it, I think, 3 times and then listened to it 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Is the Talent Code. And now I'm blanking on his name. I'll think of it, of course, after we hang up. But the Talent Code is about how, when you're building habits, myelin is laid down on the neural sheaths, and that you can break almost any goal down into very small component parts of actions and thoughts that go together. And if you string them together, you create this quote unquote talent. So it's, you know, people think you're talented, but basically it's just hard work. So the Talent Code is one of the best books I've ever read. And other than that, I find myself now turning to podcasts all the time. I listen to them brushing my teeth, when I'm swimming, when I'm at medical appointments. I just came from a rolfing appointment, and everybody knows I walk in with my iPhone. I say, we're going to listen to Invisibilia. We're going to listen to Scott. And so I find myself learning constantly from podcasts these days. So that's where I'm taking in most of my really exciting data.
So here's a real good podcast. I know you've probably heard of it already, but by Malcolm Gladwell, Revisionist History.
I just downloaded it. So I haven't listened to it, but I will tell you, one of the other books I thought about telling you about was one of his books, because they make me think. Blink made me think. I still remember the opening sentence of that book, you know, about Hoving, looking at the Greek chorus.
Yeah.
You know, so Gladwell got under my skin. But I haven't listened to his podcast. My kids are trying to turn me on to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Oh, that's another good one. Yes, definitely listen to that one.
But they're 6 hours a piece.
I know they're long, and that's a challenge for me nowadays. I used to listen to it. I got through the first probably say third of the episodes, and then I had to take a hiatus with the kids being busy. But they are really good. I mean, in terms of storytelling and things like that, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Well, I if we could just alter the question from books to podcasts, I'd really like to tell people that Scott Barry Kaufman's podcast is outstanding. Michelle McQuaid, who's a MAP graduate, her podcast is great.
Yeah, it's really good.
Rich Roll. I don't know if you've heard of Rich Roll. He's the ultra athlete.
The ultra marathoner, right?
The ultra marathoner. He's got a great one on habits and purpose and talent and hard work. And then I listened to Hidden Brain and Invisibilia and, the Jonathan Fields, The Good Life Project. I have to say that it is such a painless way to take in data at all times of day that it's really taken over. Here I write books. I love books. But man, you can get so much in your brain so quickly with these podcasts, and there are others. But those are the ones that I'm just constantly listening to all the time.
Okay, the most important question of all, and I haven't asked it yet, but what is the best way for us to order your book right now, The Getting Grit, or even some of the other ones?
Thank you for asking. So the book is everywhere. It's in a lot of bookstores. I think it's in most bookstores. It's in airports. But what really matters for authors is that it be ordered from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and then a review. Because those reviews, I mean, let me just take a moment to say, in 30 years of publishing books, the reviews that go up on Goodreads or Amazon, particularly if they're good, they really matter because you won't get audio rights on your books or even foreign rights until you've amassed enough reviews. And people often say, yeah, I'll go write you a review, but it takes a few extra minutes and people are always so busy. But the nicest thing people can do is not just order the book, but write a review with some, you know, helpful feedback for other people who are wondering, is it the right book for them? So, and they can go to my website. You can order a signed copy directly from me at carolinemiller.com. So I really appreciate you asking the question.
Yeah, no problem. I think it's a fantastic book. I'm looking forward to getting my copy. And I just wanted to say that's all the questions I have for today. Caroline, thank you. Thank you for being on the show today. This was a real treat for me, and I know it will be for my listeners as well.
Well, thank you for having me, and best of luck with this and the child, and everything else you have on your plate this year.
Awesome. Thanks. You can connect with Caroline online through a variety of ways. Her Twitter handle is @CarolineMCoach, and her website is carolinemiller.com. All the links and resources Caroline and I discussed, including the link to Admiral McRaven's commencement speech that Caroline mentioned, and you really don't want to miss that, as well as a link to her latest book, Getting Grit, can be found at the page created especially for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/002. And finally, if you could do me a small favor, I would greatly appreciate it. If you could give an honest rating and review, that would really go a long way towards helping us keep the podcast visible and findable by new people like you. And hey, if you give it a 5-star rating and leave a review, I'll be sure to mention you by name in an upcoming episode as a small way to say thanks. I'll see you next time.